Hello sa inyong lahat at welcome back sa isa na namang episode ng Shapers and Shakers, Personalities of the EDSA People Power Revolution, kung saan itinatampok natin ang ilan sa mga pangunahing personalidad at aktor ng makasaysayang EDSA People Power. We are your hosts. Ako si Lee.
Ako si Bro.
Ako si Aaron.
At ako si Veg. And you are tuned in to podcast, Conversations on Philippine History, Politics, and Society. At kung nung nakaraang episode ay pinag-usapan natin ang role na ginampanan ng Simbahang Katoliko sa pamumuno ni Jaime Cardinal Sin, ngayon, pag-uusapan naman natin ang isa pang aktor, isa pang historical figure na masasabi natin kontrobersyal. So, madaming mga iba-ibang pagpapalagay tungkol sa kanyang mga naging ambag sa kasaysayan. Pero ang hindi natin maikakaila ay yung halaga ng papel na ginampanan niya at ng kilusang masasabing pinamunuan niya noong panahon ng diktaturya hanggang sa pagbagsak nga nito noong 1986.
Tama, no? At sa totoo lang, medyo challenging itong episode na ito. Kasi nga, this person and the movement that he led has always been wrought with controversy, kumbaga. Lalo na ngayon na talamak ang red tagging at meron pang anti-terror law.
Gayunpaman, mahalaga pa rin na pag-usapan to kasi di naman madedenay yung naging papel nila sa kasaysayan. So, sino at ano ba to? Ngayon, pag-uusapan natin ang buhay at pakikibaka ni Jose Maria Sison, founding chairman ng Communist Party of the Philippines.
Kapag pinag-uusapan ng martial law sa kasaysayan, madalas limitado lang ang usapan kay Marcos, kay Ninoy, tapos EDSA. Kaya hindi rin talaga nakakapagtaka na madalas yung istorya ay limitado lang sa binary ng Marcos versus the Aquino debate. At unfortunate siya kasi katulad na lang ng mga naipakita natin before since sinimulan natin yung Shapers and Shakers series, komplikado yung kasaysayan ng Pilipinas at maraming mga individual at grupo ang kasali dyan.
Maganda yung observation ng historiador na si Vicente Rafael doon sa foreword of the 2013 book Subversive Lives, A Family Memoir of the Marcos Years. Sabi niya, there are no monuments of communism in the Philippines habang maraming mga estatwa para sa mga nationalist figures. At maaaring maraming dahilan sa likod nito, pero kung ano pa man yung mga yan, at some point, we need to address this glaring absence in our narrative.
Tama, no? Saka tulad nga nung sinabi ni Aaron, ngayon sobrang talamak ng red tagging. Nandyan yung anti-terror law na sinimula ng Duterte administration. So napakaraming hindi nakakaunawa sa kasaysayan ng komunismo sa Pilipinas. At dahil hindi naman natin alam kung ano ba talaga to, mas namumuo at kumakalat yung takot, yung prejudice. At syempre alam naman natin na yung suppression ng mga democratic rights and freedoms natin ay madalas sumasakay doon sa fears and anxieties natin over things that we do not have a real understanding of. So this episode is a humble attempt to shed light on the life of Jose Maria Sison and of the movement that he led for many years. Pero bago natin pag-usapan yan, mag-break muna tayo.
Okay, so simulan natin yung kwento sa founding chairman ng Communist Party of the Philippines na si Jose Maria Sison, or mas kilala sa tawag na Joma Sison o Joma. No, so Joma was born on February 8, 1939 in Cabugao, Ilocos Sur to Salustiano Serrano Sison and Florentina Canlas. Ayon mismo kay Joma, nabibilang sa landlord class ang pamilya nila. No? So as in sila daw ang principal feudal family sa kanilang bayan sa Cabugao.
Mula pa noong panahon ng mga Kastila, prominente na talaga ang mga ninuno ni Joma. Sabi niya, yung lolo daw niya sa father's side ay ang huling gobernadorcillo sa bayan nila at unang municipal president pagpasok ng mga Amerikano. And at different times in pre-war years, mga lolo o kaya naman ay tiyuhin niya daw ang nasa iba't ibang posisyon sa local politics ng bayan nila sa Ilocos Sur.
Meanwhile, the maternal side of his family was also of the landlord class. pero sa Central Luzon naman, sa Pampanga. So Joma would describe the values of his family as feudal. Sa librong The Philippine Revolution, The Leader's View, this is how he described the status of his family when he was a child.
The best front seats in church belonged to the family. During the town fiesta, special seats of honor were reserved for us because the mayor was almost always a close relative and was dependent on the captive votes of tenants. Up to the early 1950s, I would witness political candidates coming to our house to beg for these votes.
So makikita kung saan nilalagay ni Joma yung pamilya niya doon sa framework ng kasika democracy sa Pilipinas. Ano? Like yung land-owning family niya can grant favors to politicians in the form of the captive votes of their tenants. Interestingly, Joma also seems to take pride in his family support of the Nationalist Revolution noong 1896, laban sa mga Kastila. Sabi niya, his great-grandfather and his grandfather and granduncles were arrested and tortured by the Spanish military officers. And later on, they supported the revolutionary government and even offered their 20-room mansion as a transit house para sa mga presong Kastila.
So, sa madaling salita, Joma remembers his ancestors as patriotic, no? So, learning this story as a child sparked his interest in the study of the Philippine Revolution, no? Pero habang lumalaki si Joma, sabi niya, mas nare-recognize niya yung kahirapan ng sitwasyon ng mga tenants nila kasi, sabi niya, nakakasalamuha niya daw yung mga anak ng mga magsasaka ganyan, no? So, pero itong mga ganitong klaseng sympathies, sabi ni Joma, na-realize na lang daw niya in hindsight. No? So, his family, his father particularly, wanted to direct Joma to continue their feudal yearnings. Ika nga.
Tama. This is what Joma had to say about his father's plans for him simula nang lumuwa siya sa Maynila para mag-high school sa Ateneo. My father had my whole life worked out in his mind and encouraged me to adopt a plan. He was exceedingly proud that I had finished my elementary education as valedictorian. He urged me to always top my class, excel in writing and oratory, get a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism, take up law, top the bar examination, proceed to Harvard for higher studies, marry a beautiful wealthy woman, and come back to Ilocos to start the climb to the presidency of the country. End of quote. Ayan, so nasa vision ni Salustiano Sison na maging presidente ng Pilipinas si Joma. At actually, kung titignan yung pattern ng mga naging presidente ng Pilipinas ng mga panahon na to, masasabi na this was a very plausible scenario, no? He came from a prominent landlord family. So may local base, merong social and political capital mula sa panahon ng mga Kastila hanggang post-war years. At merong pera to send him to the best schools here and abroad. He really fit the pattern, kumbaga. But then again, Joma went to a totally different path at nagsimula yan noong siya ay nag-aral sa Maynila.
Yes, no. So Joma went to Ateneo de Manila in 1952. Sabi niya, he was an honor student in Ateneo but did not top his class. Madalas daw kasing nahihila ng grades niya sa religion yung grades niya pababa, no? So after his second year, he recounts how he was honorably dismissed sa Ateneo kasi pinagbintangan daw siya for leading his classmates to skip their classes as protest against the American Jesuits na teachers nila noon. So he was then transferred to the Dominican Colegio de San Juan de Letran kung saan niya tinapos yung high school noong 1956.
According to Joma, he was determined to go to UP for college. Kahit na sabi ng mga Dominican teachers niya sa Letran na breeding ground daw ito ng devil. At kahit daw gusto ng parents niya na bumalik siya ng Ateneo, mas pipiliin pa rin niya ang secular education. Masasabi na among Joma's greatest intellectual influence or heroes was Claro M. Recto. Fan din daw ni Recto yung tatay niya. And Recto's nationalism and patriotism appealed to Joma as well. He was also enamored to the Ilocano intellectual and the first Filipino Marxist Isabelo de las Reyes, and he was always been interested in reading Marx kahit nung high school pa lang siya. Pero nung pumasok na si Joma sa UP, he was inspired by more nationalist intellectuals like Teodoro Agoncillo and Cesar Adib Mahul. Sa UP, mas napag-igting yung critical take ni Joma on American imperialism and what he described as conservative nationalism.
And finally, Joma had access to Marxist texts in the UP library, which were actually, you know, previously unavailable to him at the Ateneo and Letran. So by 1958, he was already avidly reading Marx, Engels, Lenin, and Mao. In reading these works, Joma started thinking about how these analyses of society and social change can be applied to Philippine society. And eventually, he met and made friends with other students who, like him, were hungry for social critique. At dito na din nga niya nakilala ang kanyang partner na si Julie De Lima. Together with other friends, Joma and Julie formed a study group at eto na nga yung naging Student Cultural Association of the University of the Philippines or SCAUP. So ayon kay Joma, mahalaga yung role na ginampanan ng SCAUP in terms of reframing the debate in the university. Nung kasing pumasok siya sa UP, ang nagtutunggaling mga ideya, primarily, ay yung old debate pa din sa pagitan ng mga religious sectarian organizations saka mga liberal. So basically, Catholic student groups saka non-religious groups na nung mga panahon na to actually pinamumunuan ang mga fraternities. So SCAUP opened up the debate between what Joma referred to as adherents of New Democratic Revolutions, yung grupo nila, versus the conservative liberals and pro-imperialists na not necessarily Catholic-oriented. Pero syempre, andun pa rin yung mga religious groups sa mga debating yan.
Ayon pa mismo kay Joma, sa SCAUP nagsimula yung pag-develop ng general line ng national democracy. And it also served as a cover for the study of Marxism. Na syempre at this time, no, lalo na sa context ng Cold War, ay napakadelikado. By 1959, Joma graduated. Tinapos niya sa loob ng 3 years lamang yung kanyang 4-year program on English literature and proceeded on becoming a teaching fellow sa UP. In the same year, he married his life partner, Julie. Noong mga panahon na yun, papasok na ng 1960s, the Philippine government intensified its anti-communist campaign. Inilunsad yung Committee Against Anti-Filipino Activities or CAFA, na ang main objective talaga ay to suppress the spread of radical ideas, lalong-lalo na yung mga associated sa komunismo. Joma joined the anti-CAFA mobilizations and by 1962, officially joined the old Communist Party of the Philippines na mas kilala ngayon sa kanyang Filipino name na Partido Komunista ng Pilipinas or PKP.
So, Joma worked with National Labor Federations and peasant organizations. No? Pero masasabi that at this point, yung isa sa mga pinakamahalagang samahan na itinatag ni Joma ay yung KM, yung Kabataang Makabayan, kung saan siya ang naging founding chairman mula 1964 hanggang 1968. So yung KM ay isang malawak na samahan ng mga kabataan mula sa hanay ng mga estudyante, manggagawa, magsasaka, saka professionals. So kasama niya dito yung ilan na niyang mga kasama sa youth wing ng PKP at ilan ding mga kasamahan niya sa SCAUP. So mahalaga yung KM kasi ito yung naging pangunahing organisasyon na nagpalawak ng National Democratic Movement. No? Pero ano ba ang national democracy? No? So, at ang halaga nito sa pagkakabuo ng lumalakas at lumalawak na mass movement noon sa bansa. No? Yan at iba pa after this short break.
So, para maintindihan natin yung National Democracy or National Democratic Program ng KILUSAN, dapat maunawaan yung general characterization ni Joma ng Philippine society. Ayon sa kanya, ang lipunang Pilipino daw ay semi-feudal and semi-colonial. Big words. So, palawanag natin yan. Una, yung semi-colonial or neo-colonial character ng Philippine politics. So basically, ang sinasabi lang niyan ay kahit na independent na tayo from the United States after 1946, nananatiling subservient yung national interest ng bansa sa interest ng mga imperialistang kano. Siyempre, nangyayari yan sa ruling class ng Philippines at bumubuo sa kalakhang estado under pa rin sa undue influence ng Estados Unidos. So malaki pa rin ang say ng United States sa iba't ibang policy ng bansa, especially on economy, democracy, education, national defense, international relations, at marami pang iba.
Economically naman, semi-feudal daw yung ekonomiya ng Pilipinas kasi primarily agricultural pa din yung production ng bansa. So feudal kasi pre-capitalist. Walang totoong industriya na nagpo-produce halimbawa ng mga metal products, machines, ganyan. Pero semi-feudal lang kasi hindi lang landlords or panginoong may lupa yung nagdo-dominate ng production. Nandyan din yung tinatawag niya na comprador bourgeois sa mga syudad na nagmamay-ari ng malalaking mga negosyo. Basically, semi-feudal din yung ekonomiya kasi yung agricultural production ay napagawan na ng agricultural mills to service the export of these agricultural products. Siyempre sa setup na to, ang talo ay yung mga magsasaka sa kanayunan at yung maliit na sektor ng mga manggagawa sa mangilan-ngilang pabrika ng textile, sigarilyo at mga breweries sa syudad.
So ayan, nag-crash course na tayo. Siyempre mas sophisticated at komplikado yan. Pero in a nutshell, ganyan yung analysis ni Joma at sampung ng kanyang mga kasama sa kilusan. So ngayon, sa pagkapalagay nila sa malakolonyal at malapyudal na ayos ng lipunang Pilipino, ano yung dapat gawin ng National Democratic Movement? So yung programa, ayon kay Joma, dapat ganito. Sa politika, dapat ma-achieve natin yung tunay na national sovereignty at kumawala sa kontrol ng Estados Unidos. Pangalawa, sa pang-ekonomiya naman, sabi niya, dapat yung mga industriya ay nationalized at kontrolado ng mga Pilipino through national industrialization. Hindi lamang ng mga negosyanteng Pilipino, pero ng Pilipinong Estado. And finally, culturally, sabi ni Joma, dapat i-advance ang nationally scientific at mass-oriented na mga kaalaman. Mga sa edukasyon, sining, entertainment, at iba pa. So we should do away with religious superstitions, bourgeois art and philosophy, at dapat daw iangat yung kamalayan ng mga tao and make them aspire for a revolutionary change.
So, itong National Democratic Program na ito, ito yung sinusunod ng maraming nabuong mga samahan ng mga kabataan, manggagawa, artists, writers, then later on ng mga kababaihan, teachers, at iba pa. No? So, ngayon, ito yung million dollar question. Kung naniniwala ka ba sa semi-feudal at semi-colonial na pagtingin sa lipunan at naniniwala ka din sa model or programa ng national democracy, komunista ka na ba agad? No? So, member ka na ba agad ng CPP or ng NPA?
Well, masalimuot na usapan yan. Ano? Pero kung ako yung tatanungin at inaral ko na rin naman itong kilusan na to, ano, ang sagot ko dyan ay hindi. Hindi automatic yon. Of course, I will be unfaithful to existing scholarship and to the voluminous public statement issued by National Democratic Organizations and the Communist Party of the Philippines kung sabihin ko na walang relationship at all yung mga samahan na to. Malinaw that National Democratic Organizations at present, which by the way are legal and are protected by our constitutional right to free association and assembly, share similar social and political analysis with the CPP. Okay? May pagkakaparehas sa pagkusuri nila ng lipunan at politikang Pilipino. Pero it is a grave mistake, and I cannot emphasize this enough, to haphazardly say that activists and groups who subscribe to national democratic analysis are communist rebels. Alam natin na yung katotohanan ng peligro na malabel na komunista, lalo na sa mga panahon na yon, pati na din yung panahon ng diktaturya. So, dapat maging maingat tayo sa mga ganyan.
Yeah, so, hindi tayo privy sa kung sino ang member ng Communist Party. Ang sinasabi natin, komprehensibo yung analysis nila ng lipunang Pilipino at may pagkakapareho. And for what it's worth, kailangan nating alalahanin lagi na hindi krimen kahit na kailan ang magsuri ng lipunan at maniwala sa kahit na anong ideolohiya. No, pag nilaya natin yan, sandali, at ituloy natin ang kwentuhan after this break.
Okay. Okay pa ba tayo?
Kaya pa.
So habang miyembro si Joma ng PKP, naging siya ang de facto leader ng mga kabataan sa loob ng Kilusan. Masalimuot yung kasaysayan na to, pero sabihin na lang natin na nagkaroon ng ideological and programmatic differences sa pagitan ni Joma at mga old leadership ng party. Halimbawa, criticize ni Joma yung sabi niya ay opportunistic tendencies ng leadership through the years. Sabi niya, hindi na epektibo or effective yung program ng partido. Yung instances of military adventurism, pati na rin yung reactionary politics daw tiyumano ng old party. So dahil dyan, nagpa siya si Joma at mga kasama niya sa KM na tumiwalag at maglabas ng document noong 1968 na pinamagatang Rectify Our Errors and Rebuild the Party. Dito na nabuo yung bagong party, which is now often referred to with its English name, the Communist Party of the Philippines. It was founded officially December 26, 1968. The following year, the party organized its armed wing through a faction of the old Hukbong Pagpalaya ng Bayan, led by Bernabe Buscaino, o mas kilala bilang Commander Dante. Ito na yung New People's Army, or NPA.
So, alalahanin natin yung historical context din ng pagkakabuo ng CPP-NPA. So, we know that Marcos became president in 1965, no? And he was up for re-election in 1969 kasi 4-year terms lang before. So, sa unang termino pa lang, kapansin-pansin na yung authoritarian tendencies ni Marcos saka yung talagang lalo niyang closeness sa Amerika. The 1969 elections, it was also at the time, the dirtiest and the most expensive election in post-war history. Talagang inilaban ni Marcos ang pagiging kauna-unahang pangulo na ma-re-elect noong mga panahon na yon. And it was quite historic. He was really the first president na na-re-elect. And Marcos was in his second term in the earliest years of the CPP. Pero first term pa lang niya, mabilis na yung paglawak ng kabataang makabayan sa buong bansa. Di lang sa Kamaynilaan, pero maging sa probinsya.
Kaya hindi rin talaga nakakagulat na by 1972, nang ideklara ang martial law, ay lumawak na ang National Democratic Movement at lumaki na rin ang CPP, which adopted Marxism, Leninism, and Mao Zedong thoughts as its ideology. Joma busied himself in writing party papers and documents at pangunahin na dyan yung specific characteristics of our people's war and our urgent tasks. By 1971, unang nailathala ang Philippine Society and Revolution, written by Amado Guerrero, widely believed to be Joma's nom de guerre. Mahalaga ang PSR kasi ito yung tinuturing na kumbaga Biblia ng revolusyonaryong Kilusan.
So, mabilis na nag-gain ng momentum ang CPP? Madaming mga naging miyembro sa urban areas at nakakapag-recruit na din ang NPA sa Kanayunan. No? So, and then, pinroklama ang martial law. And initially, masasabing nasuppress yung paglawak ng grupo. Pero alam naman natin na after a short time of regrouping, the oppressive military state of Marcos only contributed to the growth of the Communist Party, earning Ferdinand Marcos the moniker of being the greatest recruiter of the NPA. So, in other words, yung mas matinding paglabag sa mga democratic rights, mas malupit na pang-aapi sa mga Pilipino, yung mas talamak na pang-aabuso sa kapangyarihan, naging malakas na motivation para sa maraming mga Pilipino noon na sumali sa Kilusan. At dahil ilegal sa panahon ng batas militar ang kahit na anong porma ng pagkontra sa gobyerno, marami sa mga aktivista ay nagdesisyon na mag-UG or yung mag-underground and consequently sumapi sa CPP.
Exactly. So sa madaling salita, in the midst of intense oppression and militarization, a lot of Filipinos at this time believed that the only way to end the dictatorship was through armed struggle or revolution. At tulad ng sinabi ni Aaron, maraming nag-UG, sumapi sa partido, at syempre later on, took on the highest form of struggle, which of course was to join the People's Army in the countryside. Siyempre alam natin that the People's War of the CPP-NPA involved surrounding the center of power in the city from the countryside. So needless to say, the strongest areas of the CPP or the NPA at this time were in areas like the Sierra Madre, the Quezon-Bicol region, and Mindanao. And meanwhile, the party had political officers who continuously worked to expand the revolutionary movement through party cells in universities, factories, urban poor communities, at iba pa.
And of course, as the leader of the party, Joma was in constant hiding. Pero noong 1977, nadakip si Joma at nakulong. Sabi nila, majority of his time in prison was spent in solitary confinement. Pero kahit nakakulong yung kanilang leader, nagpatuloy yung paglaki ng CPP at ng NPA. Scholars would describe the movement that it led in the years of the dictatorship as the strongest, most organized, and most consolidated opposition force against Marcos. And of course, the government did not take this lightly. The military was given a bloated budget, training, and resources to suppress the People's War. They detained, tortured, and disappeared suspected communists and sympathizers. Villages were burned, attacked by the military when they believed they were coddling NPA soldiers.
Nevertheless, by the 1980s, the party and the NPA was at its strongest. The leadership was already envisioning a revolutionary victory by the end of the decade. At its peak, it was estimated to have around 25,000 members and soldiers. So yung malaking tanong dyan ay anong nangyari? Sagutin natin yan sa ating pagbabalik. So maraming nangyari. Una, the economic crisis in the 1980s was getting worse. Marcos's legitimacy was suffering and he lifted martial law in 1981. Then in 1983, alam naman natin lahat na Ninoy was assassinated. At mas lumawak yung anti-Marcos forces. Kumbaga, di na lang mga National Democrats yung tahasang tumutulig sa kay Marcos. Mas naging outspoken na yung mga non-communist opposition, kumbaga. And of course, we already know that by 1986, the EDSA Revolution would oust Marcos. Ang tanong, nasaan ang strongest, most organized, and most consolidated opposition force against Marcos in the moment of his fall?
So, ayun na nga, no? So, syempre, in the past episodes, kinuwento na natin yung snap elections kung saan tumakbo si Cory against Marcos, no? So, when the snap election was called, nagbaba ng memo ang party leadership. Ang panawagan ng CPP, boycott. No? So, sabi nila, i-boycott yung election na yan kasi alam naman natin na dadayain lang yan ni Marcos at gagamitin niya lang yan to legitimize his regime, no? So, and to be fair, tama naman sila, no? So, dinaya nga naman ni Marcos yung eleksyon. So, ang tanong, saan sila sumabit, no? So, di nila nabasa yung pulso ng mga tao, kumbaga, no? Many would say, no, they did not foresee the massive civilian support behind Cory, which eventually humiliated Marcos. And eventually, he fled Malacanang. No? So consequently, the party which has been fiercely fighting Marcos bago pa man mag-martial law was sidelined in the moment of his ouster. No? So this will later on be recognized as a major political blunder. No? sabi mismo yan ng party sa isang issue ng Ang Bayan, no? So which is the party's official organ.
In the aftermath of EDSA, one of Cory's first official acts was to free all of Marcos's political prisoners. At kasama na doon si Joma. So Joma now had to confront this supposed blunder as the party's leader. Maraming sa mga kadre ang nakita itong boycott policy ng party at ang EDSA as a missed opportunity. And needless to say, nagresulta ito ng internal debates with regard to the strategy, tactics, and ideology of the party. So maraming mga individual sa iba't ibang level ng party structure ang nag-criticize sa CPP and demanded for some changes in their existing revolutionary program in light, of course, of what transpired in EDSA. These debates continued for years. Joma, who would eventually base himself in the Netherlands simula 1987 bilang political refugee, got involved in intense public debates with his comrades na ang ilan pa ay na-publish sa Philippine Daily Inquirer through facts, ang tawag nila dyan, facts wars. Ano? And all of these debates would implode into the party split of 1992. Ito yung pagtiwalag ng madaming mga miyembro ng partido sa CPP dahil sa mga fundamental disagreements nila kay Joma in the aftermath of the release of a document called Reaffirm Our Basic Principles and Rectify Our Errors, written by Armando Liwanag, which of course was the nom de guerre of Joma.
So sa kasaysayan ng Kilusan, tinatawag yung split na ito as the split between those who reaffirm the party's basic principle and those who reject it and reject Joma's leadership. Sila ngayon yung reaffirmists or RA at yung kabilang side naman ay rejectionists or RJ. Nako, napakasalimuot na usapan ito. At ang haba na ng episode na to. So siguro mag-deep dive tayo dyan some other time. Or pwede rin siguro mag-recommend si Vec ng readings kung interesado kayo. Ang gusto lang nating sabihin dito ay after the fall of the dictatorship, Joma's leadership was under a lot of controversies. Marami pang mga usapin ang umusbong patungkol sa partido ng mga panahon na to, kagaya nung mga purges na nangyari noong 1980s.
True. Malaking dagok daw yan sa Kilusan. So basically, yung internal purges ay yung ginawang paglilinis sa hanay ng partido ng mga suspected military agents or spies who supposedly penetrated into the ranks of the party. Ang nangyari lang ay, well, it was married with paranoia and lack of due process. At ang ending, maraming mga comrades ang pinatay at tinorture kahit na wala naman daw sapat na ebidensya na nagsasabing sila ay military agents. Poignant yung sinulat na libro dyan ni Robert Francis Garcia na survivor ng internal purges na to. Basahin niyo yung libro, maikli lang. It's called To Suffer Thy Comrades, How the Revolution Decimated Its Own.
May mga iba pang kontrobersya ang pumalibot kay Joma in the last few decades. No? So maraming naging critical halimbawa sa naging initial support ng CPP kay Rodrigo Duterte in 2016. At may mga scholar din na nagsasabi na responsable daw si Joma at ang CPP sa Plaza Miranda bombing noong 1971. No? So di umano ay binomba daw nila ang meeting de avance ng opposition party noon para mas umigting ang sentimiento laban kay Marcos. So siguro at this point, kasi sayan yung huhusga sa naging ambag ni Joma sa politika ng lipunang Pilipino. Pero tayo dito sa podcast, naniniwala tayo na Jose Maria Sison was among, if not the most influential political figure in our post-war history. No, we can say that. No, so Joma would spend the rest of his days in self-exile. No, so he continued to lead the revolution from the Netherlands for years. Sadly, Joma never saw his homeland again. Jose Maria Sison died in Utrecht noong December 16, 2022 after prolonged hospitalization. No, so he was 83 years old.
Complex ang legacies ni Joma at tulad ng lagi nating sinasabi, talagang siguro kasaysayan na ang huhusga. So tapusin natin tong episode na to. Maraming salamat sa pakikinig sa isa na namang episode ng Shapers and Shakers, Personalities of the EDSA Revolution. Abangan ang aming susunod na episodes and subscribe to our podcast on all major streaming apps, pati na rin sa YouTube.
Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn. For more information about the show, visit our website, podcast.org.
Maraming salamat sa pakikinig. And as always, have a good day.